Hello and welcome to The Dive, presented by Honda, Season 4, Episode 30. Our good friend Azale is back from vacation. Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you.
You get to do anything?
No. Well, I played video games. That was good. I was grinding some PS4 games, you know, chilling on the couch with my doggies and Joanne. I beat Ghost of Tsushima, one of the best games I think I've ever played.
I've heard Big recommend on that one.
It is so cool. Like, just graphically and aesthetically, it's such a beautiful game. It's one of the first games in so long where I've actually been playing and I just want to like ride around and explore shit. Like, I probably annoyed Joanne really badly when I was playing, because like every 5 seconds I'm like, Joanne, look at this, look how cool, you know, look at this, look at this. She's like, I know, it's beautiful.
Look,
like,
what I look at this.
Yeah. But look at the sun, it's shining in the trees.
Macaroni necklace, are you happy?
Wait, you can make macaroni necklaces in that game?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm glad you're back, though. Freak sucks.
Thanks. Yeah, that's true.
I like Freak. Oh,
I'll go on vacation next because I got two doses of Freak. Maybe that's it. It's like dose that's fine.
Yeah.
I had a double dose of Freak.
It's like a really sweet drink. You know, you take the first sip, you're like, oh, it's pretty good. Pretty good, pretty good. You know, if you keep drinking it, you start feeling a bit sick in your belly. That's Freak. Yeah.
This is super random, but I don't usually drink sweet drinks, but I had, I think we already talked about this maybe, the exploding boba. We definitely didn't talk about it on the show.
You talked about this in a story meeting, yeah.
Yeah, I'm hooked on exploding boba now.
Exploding, you like the little strawberry ones?
I had mango ones, but they're like gushers. They're boba, but gushers.
When you told me that blew my mind because I'd never heard about it. And I was like, I'm going to go try that. And then I forgot. So now my boomer brain just didn't retain it. Because I asked Joanne about it. And she's like, I've tried that.
I was going to say, she is like the queen of boba. Well, so that's why I was like, how do you not know?
Well, she said she didn't think it was good. So,
Have you guys ever had the jelly? That's pretty
lychee?
Good.
Lychee jelly?
It wasn't lychee, though.
I had grass jellies.
It was something else. It was like a pineapple jelly that Ashley got once. That was really good. I like the weird ones she gets.
Yeah. Some of them are a bit too much, though. There's this one drink place that we used to go to, and then they changed all their drinks, and they, like, instead of just boba, there was like 10 different kinds of things in it, and it just felt like I was just drinking like trash at that point. It's like all these little particles of things are going in your straw, and like, this is too much, man. I
went to a place like that. It was on Sautel. It was like matcha something. It was just
matcha
cha?
Yeah.
No, matcha cha's fine. I forget what it
Joanne
was.
Joanne loves matcha cha.
It was on the other side, you know, like close to where like Michael's is and stuff.
Okay.
It looked really cool. All their drinks were like nuts, but it was like, all right, calm down.
Oh, right beside the ramen places, right? Dekukuya, beside Dekukuya and stuff. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well,
the King we're
League of Legends. Let's go. All right. So, welcome back to me. Patch 10.16 is out as a present. For
the
me coming back, they released it, and I think that was very nice of them to do. It's going to be our playoff patch. I'm pretty excited for it. There's a lot of changes actually in this. Something that, you know, I immediately kind of focused on because there's so many changes. For me, I was immediately thinking about kind of the revival of some of these split pushers. I have heard from some of the designers and seeing them posting online talking about, you know, one of the ways that they are hoping to combat the whole, like, you must group and fight for Dragon Soul every game, like, this is the strategy, is by increasing the power of some of these split pushers. Fiora and Jax both got some pretty decent buffs. I tend to think that Fiora buffs are a lot nicer, actually. You know, 3 seconds off of the queue at rank one, you get a little bit less of a refund when you hit them. It's 50% instead of 60. But, like, you know, at max rank, it is 2 seconds off. And if you play a high CDR Fiora build, you're going to have, like, essentially no cooldown on your Q. Like, it is going to be pretty intense because it's 6 seconds base. You get 50% back every time you hit. And you can play 40% CDR on Fiora pretty easily, to the point where it's like you're basically just mashing Q. And I do think that that's fairly strong. Jax also got a little bit of cooldown off the Counter-Strike. I already feel like there are, you know, situations where, at least as far as the 1v1, those champions are really, really good and warrant being picked. It's just that people don't like team fighting on them, and dragons have been so important. I'm not sure if this is enough to push people away from it, but I'm hoping that some teams will experiment more with kind of split push style.
Yeah, I was already talking to Licorice before these buffs came out about possible Jax picks. because I saw it in LCK and I got super excited and I was like, oh, you know, what about here? And he's just like, Jax is just too hard to pick right now because the early game is so important. You know, you can stack dragons and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And there has been this bigger conversation around the meta. Perks was one of the most outspoken about it on one of the shows, talking about how he really doesn't like, you know, how focused it is on stacking the dragons, getting to the soul. I know as far as solo queues, the designers have talked a lot about there have been, you know, a decent amount of wins versus teams with souls. And if you draft your team composition around Fiora or Jax, which I think the Jax buffs are actually also really good, the 2 seconds off of his off
it's
his
basically
stun.
Saying you don't need to max your E second. Yeah. I think is what they're hoping is that you go W first and then Q second and you can sit on a lower cooldown E.
Yeah. It does make me think this might actually put more emphasis on RNG, because some champions do not use like Cloud Soul well at all. Mm-hmm. And so then if you've already drafted this team that's base bound split pushing and your opponents are trying to stack and then it rolls Cloud Soul or something, is that going to make you feel worse? Because you have to make these decisions around your team comp going in. Mm-hmm. And if they're trying to buff more split pushing and more options that don't revolve around it, they're kind of increasing the importance of the RNG on the dragons.
Yeah. I mean, that's always been kind of a discussion, right? Like, even I was on playtest when they were first introducing elemental dragons. And even back then in development, I was like, what if we just showed in champ select what dragons were going to spawn, right? And there's been so much discussion about that over the years. Obviously, I'm not the only one who's had that idea. So many people have talked about that. But it's like, you know, my point is just like, we were talking about that even in development, right? You know, because it's the idea of like, I always thought personally it would be cool because, you know, back then, especially first dragon was way more important than it is now. Now it's about the soul. It's, you know, but back then, you know, like one infernal, especially post buff, was actually a big deal. It was like 10% or 12% or whatever, instead of like 4% that it is now. So, you know, it often dictated whether or not you want to fight for the first dragon. So it was like, oh, do you want to draft early to fight for it? You know, now I think even if you showed the first dragon, I think it would be basically irrelevant. You would have to show what the soul is. And that I think is like taking away like a lot of the like surprise factor and the fun of like the soul pops up and all that. So I don't think designers would want to do that, but like I definitely hear what you're saying, where it could feel pretty bad if it's like, okay, I'm going to be split pushed and not play for soul at all. But then it's like ocean soul, and now you can't push your side lane matchup, and you also can't team fight because it's ocean soul. But as far as like designers saying that a decent number of teams have lost with soul, there's a handful of games, but it's still like almost a 90%.
No, I'm talking about solo queue stats.
Oh,
that was a solo queue thing.
Okay. Yeah. So I'd seen in solo queue that was, like 75 ish was what the numbers I had seen. But like, I know in LCS it was like almost 90% win rate with soul. And that's including Golden Guardians. I think lost 2 of the games with soul themselves when they did like hardcore early game comps.
I mean,
so the thing with these stats, because this is a discussion that always has to be made, like if it is a dragon-centric meta and you just look at, oh, this one variable of they had soul, they won.
Of course.
They also won probably 5 team fights leading up to it to get that soul. So that's one of the big things that influences the stats, especially around something like this that has so much baggage that goes along with it.
And that's, I mean, that's true, but 90% is a pretty excessive win rate. You know, like when you start comparing about other important objectives, like historically, like barons and stuff like that, like 90 is insanely high. So like there's probably a little bit too much of an importance. You can argue, unless if you don't like this playstyle, like perks or something, that there's too much on it. And like without changing the system, if you just start buffing champs, I know this is going to be a little hyperbolic because the buffs to Jax and Fiora weren't huge, but you start getting more into like the Dota 2 style of like hard countering things. We're like, okay, if dragons are going to be this strong, that's basically a 90% win rate and you have to team fight for them. If you're going to make another playstyle viable, you have to make that playstyle have insane strengths in other ways. Mm-hmm. So like, it would be like, make the counter pick top lane hyper carries actually nuts. And then you start getting into more rock, paper, scissory stuff. Which is, you know, this is a different design philosophy than I think Riot has ever been behind.
I just want to open the door to possible big swings, because if you're, especially in pro, if the meta and everybody is agreed upon, oh my God, the importance of these dragons stacking. And so most of the games are drafted around 5-on-5 style and trying to do the exact same thing for both teams. The one team that gets the advantage early and wins this team fight and gets to start stacking them is going to have an overwhelming 90%+ advantage, because not only are they the team ahead that gets this, yes, you get a power increase with the soul, but they also have very similar team comps, as both have been drafted to do very similar things. And that's why people have been also complaining about, you know, some of the games where they're like, oh, it does feel super snowbally if they're both drafting similar win conditions and then one is better. Then you also get that added onto the win rate. So if another option is strengthened to the point where we get divergent, we actually have viable divergent strategies, then there could be a bigger swing there. I'm not really fully on board that this is going to do it. I'm definitely very skeptical. We get Fiora is going to be super fun to watch, you know, especially in like the hands of some of the LPL top laners like Zoom and the Shy, or you know, LCK and stuff like that. And I'm excited to see you know, that type of stuff come out. But dragon stacking ain't going anywhere.
One thing I will say is that while the game is largely about soul, I don't agree that the way that every team gets there, it's the same, right? We actually are getting still like split push style comps and stuff. It's just things that can also group and fight, right? We still see a ton of Jace. We still see a ton of TF and champions that want to play side lane, but also can like actually group and Camille's. Poke or group and fight, you know, Camille as well, right? Like,
yeah, so, and, like, the, I, and I the point is that your goal is, how you're getting there, to win that team fight. So
I understand it is, but I still think that like, That is okay. Like, the goal for every team for League of Legends for the last like how many years has been to get Baron, right? To me, that doesn't make the game stale. It makes the game stale when every team has like the same subset of champions that they need to play in order to get there. For me personally, you know, and I have seen, you know, some people saying that it's like, oh, everyone just drafts team fight and then they fight and then that's it. And I don't think that's fully true, because some teams are indexing very heavily in early game to try to snowball dragons and force their advantage early to try to create a big gold lead so that they can, you know, take down a scaling team later on. They try to play side lanes to, you know, to pull them in different directions, or maybe like some powerful early game and then split pushing so that they can grab the first two and then ignore dragons while they take over the map. So I think there are different ways to get there. I do agree that like dragon soul is maybe too strong. But like at the same time, I enjoy that there is some forced conflict, and I know that is like a designer's goal, you know, for Dragon Soul, is that it's like there is this place that if you just ignore the whole game, you're probably gonna lose, right? And that was the intention of Dragon Soul, and I do think in that way it kind of works, because like it's fun to see the teams fight, right? And that is kind of what that is, right? And generally speaking, on third dragon, we almost always will see a fight, or at least an attempt at a fight, unless you're Dig Toss, and then maybe not, but pretty much everyone else.
Yeah,
Kobe.
Because I need. Do you want to have some input, Mark?
No, I'm ready to done. I'm done talking about dragons. There's enough other stuff to talk about.
Dragons. I'm not going to talk about dragons anymore. I just want to say, like, you know, whenever anyone says all things are going one way, obviously that's, you know, an over exaggeration and hyperbole, and then it's easy to say, well, obviously not everything, you know, is drafted this way. They specifically talked about being pretty happy with a decent amount of the teams being able to go the route of ignoring the first three dragons for your other goals of, you know, split pushing or, you know, getting more map control, and then being able to wait out that stage and then try and fight your critical fight. And I think that, you know, the idea of that is cool. When you do have the other options, you're still trying to force conflict early. Mm-hmm. And one team is trying to stack it up and then beat this big timer. And it also builds to a big moment when you fight over it. And the other team is trying to wait it out. You give up, you give up, you give up, and then you choose your moment. As you're alluding to, we've been missing some of the games where you choose your moment and you get the big conflict. But that's the goal.
There's just so many moments sometimes. Yeah. You can't really, it's hard to choose.
With these little taps to Fiora and Jax, which was the point of our whole conversation, was champion-specific buffs.
We're talking about patches? I thought we were just talking about meta.
I'm obviously going to try and jungle Jax once again, because E cooldown actually goes a long way towards jungle Jax too, because you rely more on your utility, more on your E. So I think it'll be a decent little one. For me, I was most excited, actually not about a buff, but a nerf to Karthus. And they're finally nerfing back his AP ratio on his Q to get him back down a little bit. I personally don't really enjoy playing that champion. So when he's super strong, I feel this torn inside. I want to win really badly, but I don't really want to play him really badly.
But not like this. Gets,
yeah, exactly. Not like this, you know. I'd be much more excited with, okay, they're giving Hecarim a tiny buff to his max move speed on his E, and you can, you know, charge in there. So give that a try.
I'm looking at bot lane is the most interesting thing to me. There's a ton of buffs and nerfs, and I am really hoping that they do something to shake this up with the Caitlyn buff that came in. Now she's dominant, because I hate utility marksman bot lane meta, because Jhin's coming back a little bit. He also got a small buff, but it's pretty minor in this.
Are you saying Caitlyn's utility marksman?
No, but she usually brings them on, because a lot of the utility marksmen deal with her laning the best. Varus, Ashe, and Jhin are all okay into Caitlyn, whereas like a lot of the other things just get pushed out and lose lane too hard. So like oftentimes Caitlyn comes with utility marksman meta. So like I do not want to see it. We've already had a lot of Varus. He got nerfed right as Ashe was coming to prominence, or if you're looking globally, Ashe was already pretty prominent. I just don't want that to be the world's meta again, where bot laners are just picking these couple marksmen and going in a little circle. So I hope the Lucian buff is good. It seems pretty substantial, actually. Is probably the biggest straight buff of the marksman, just getting 10 flat damage on his Q, as well as some extra bullets on his R.
So. Yeah, Misfortune also. I feel like they're bumping up a lot of the marksmen that are kind of right there. So.
Yeah, and then there's a lot of support matchups changing too. Like Morgana got tweaked, Bard got tweaked, Karma got tweaked. A lot of just kind of the... Bard has become a little bit more enchantery, I guess, with the W start that people have been doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other one that seems like... This actually seems like the biggest nerf of the whole patch to me is probably Volibear. The bonus move speed on Q at rank 1 went from 15 to 10. And 5% doesn't sound like a big deal, but it's doubled when you're moving towards champions. So that's actually a 10% move speed. 5%
sounds like a big deal to me, even just that. And I'm just,
I mean, it does. A lot of people are always memeing the small number. So I'm just trying to you know, get the importance behind it.
Don't mess with my move speed, my junglers. Move speed is everything. That was one of the biggest problems with the old pre-rework Volibear is feeling like you're just going to get kited. You don't have move speed. Yep. You don't have mobility. He does still have a gap closer in his ult, but it's a long cooldown. It's your ultimate ability.
And if you can't do anything pre-6, it's tough.
Yeah, so I am pretty worried for the move speed nerf on Q.
Yeah,
me too. So I had already I talked to a lot of the pro junglers. Some of them had been putting extra points early in Q. In matchups where the enemy has a lot of gap closers, maybe you have to do that now, in which case it's still a nerf to your damage because your W then won't be as high level.
Yeah, Nimbus also nerfed, so 5% off that as well. So like that is also a hit towards Volley, you know, like pretty much every jungler felt like was playing Nimbus. So I mean, you know, chilling smite, when you pop that, obviously you still have the slow, but you lose 5% move speed on your Nimbus. You lose 10% on your rank 1 Q. Like, that's very significant for a champion that is pretty binary and just has to walk at you. So we'll be interesting to see if Volley gets pushed out of the meta. I'm kind of bored of watching him in pro. I think he's pretty fun to play, but I don't think he's that fun to watch. So, you know, I don't really mind if he's pushed out that much as far as pro play goes, but we will see.
Yeah.
The last thing I'm actually super excited for, probably the most excited for in this patch, is actually the skins. New Kindred skin, finally.
The Spirit Blossom. Oh yeah.
Because I actually hated this.
I don't scroll this far down in patches.
It's actually the top. It's at the very top. Patch highlights.
My eyes glaze over and I only see numbers that stop when I get to Nexus Blitz changes.
I hated the Super Galaxy Kindred skin. So the only skin that I've used was the release skin. That was like 5 years ago or something. that, like, this champion is old. Well, maybe not that long, old. 3 or 4 years ago, something like that.
Still pretty significant.
But it's been a long time, so I'm actually pretty hyped for that skin.
Yeah.
All right.
Still, though, on the pro changes, because set has been so big, and since we're focusing on pro, you know, there's a ton of changes here, but the set nerfs are also pretty significant, and we had already been seeing set mid. These damage nerfs on Facebreaker and Haymaker, like, that's some of your AoE, that's some of your wave clear. So maybe set will still be in support roles, and they're trying to push him more that way, as he's really actually been highlighted there with Hex Flash. But I think these are pretty big in taking down some of the super popular flex picks.
Yeah, set was not something that bothered me too much in the meta. Actually,
I think it's cool.
Yeah, I like seeing him. I still, the flex picks are something I want to see more of. So, like, I never like when they kind of push them more to one play style, like you're saying. So, I'm not too thrilled with the set nerf of those. I like I said already a little bit. I like the support ones, like the Bard. The Karma got a pretty big nerf. Morgana got a small one. I think it was like one on her her Q. 1 second. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, it's a buff.
There's so many changes actually in this patch. It's pretty insane.
Wait, Morgana got a buff? She was already seeing play. What happened?
She was seeing play as like a counter, right?
Yeah.
And actually a lot with Caitlyn.
Yeah. I actually, in my head, I flipped those numbers. I thought that was a nerf.
You know who I want to see in support is like the Zyras and the Brands and stuff. The more like extreme risky stuff, the Vel'Koz's, the Xerath's. Those are, I think, are fun, like high risk, high reward, because you can get slammed by ganks, but you could crush lanes.
What you just said about excitement actually sparked another one. And I know we're going to keep on remembering new stuff from this patch because there's so much in this patch.
Well, we'll move on quick because we got a lot to do.
Yeah. I mean, the Akali one to me, though, is actually really exciting. Mm-hmm. And I was in Discord with someone when the original buff was announced, and they're like, oh, we're buffing her. Her E is going to be magic also. So then all your damage is streamlined, and you can feel better about building Sorc shoes and stuff. And I was like, hello, that is not a buff. That is a nerf. Akali, when there's a fed Akali in the game, everyone builds magic resistance. People are going to build magic resistance against Akali, or else they get popped anyway. This is a nerf. They're talking about, oh, you should feel better about itemizing your magic pen now as Akali. What about all the people building magic resistance against you? They feel better. That's how this actually plays out. And I think it was Palafox. He like messaged the designer. He's like, yo, this is actually going to be kind of difficult here. If this is meant to be a buff, you should do something else. So they added some more damage on her Q. And it's like 5 damage on the Q. But now, hey, you can feel better about building magic resistance. Buy your no magic mantle against Akali, because I think she's going to come back. Closer, the sub guy for T1 who got put in for Faker, already got to play her on stage. So I'm hoping more mid laners, because she's definitely one of the ones that's fun to watch. As much as everyone hated the Shroud when it blocked tower shots and everything, she's still fun.
Broken Blade's happy.
Yeah,
she's fun to watch. She's not fun to play against. I'll say that much. I absolutely loathe Akali. Anytime Akali is good, I don't want it.
I want it buffed just because Azale's rants whenever he's not happy about something are fantastic.
All right, Azale, you may move on now.
All right.
You have permission.
LCS, it is time for playoffs, baby. We're going into week 9. I've got to say, it feels like this whole year is a blur with quarantine, to be honest. But this the summer split just went by so fast. It is blowing my mind that we're almost in playoffs, and then Worlds is going to be right around the corner, and it's like, oh, my God. But we have a pretty tight race at the top now. It's actually become, you know, very surprising down towards the end. You know, it was a couple weeks ago looking like, okay, for sure, Cloud9 is first. TL maybe could get second. You know, beyond that, no one's really catching up. Cloud9 has started slipping. TL is sitting in first right now. We have, you know,
Cloud9 did more than start slipping. They fell on their ass already. Feet are in
they're
the air.
They're rolling backwards. They're flailing everywhere. They're tied with TSM right now, though. FlyQuest is only one game behind them. So now there are three teams, really, that realistically are in the running in this final weekend for that bye, which is a very big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I would be... I don't think anyone could have like believed this if you told them, you know, like I'm from the future and you're like C9 go 2-5 in their like last 4 weeks. You'd be like, all right, this guy's crazy. The time travel thing, not that weird, but the C9 slumping is whack. I just like the weird thing to me too is in the most recent games, you could chalk the first couple up to experimenting and weird drafts maybe, but they're just getting outplayed. It's not like they're doing like those big, like they would go for 3-man invades, get wiped 4 minutes in the game and bounce back and be fine. And like they've cut those mistakes out. Like that's not happening anymore. They're just getting outplayed, which is why it's even weirder to me in some ways. You know?
I think partly their laning just isn't nearly as dominant. That's been one of the biggest things that I've been noticing is they could get away with that because they'd get wiped before, but every lane won and Blapper was up 20 CS. So you're still even on gold.
Yeah.
But now that's not happening. It's like their lanes are going even. They're making mistakes in team fights and then they're just kind of getting outplayed.
And to me, the biggest part has actually been their setup for these team fights and then the execution within them as well. Some of the communication, you know, like there are ultimates that are very clearly they're trying to play around and then they are not used. They're engaging at incorrect times. And a lot of it is even what I mentioned first, the setup for it, trying to get there, get their vision down and stuff. They're skipping steps. It feels like that, to Mark's point, you could get away with if you had won the lanes and if you had you have Blabber that's already invading the jungle, like then you don't have to worry about some of these things and you do get to skip ahead. But if you have been coming out even if you have a team composition that relies on some of these synergies, you can't skip these steps. They even did stuff like they're just pushing out against the Twisted Fate who's on cooldown, you know, picking people off. It feels like there's a lot of things that are sobering moments for a Cloud9 that had dominated all of spring and the first half of summer. And there are so many things to point to with the laning and with the team fights for them to drop down. So they really have to focus. Luckily for them, their schedule coming up for last week is super easy. They have Dignitas and CLG. So I honestly think they're going to go 2-0 for sure. But that still means they have to have this focus that you're going to have four playoffs because only the top two get those buys. And you already mentioned, you know, Team Liquid, Cloud9, TSM, FlyQuest, all pretty close in there. Even technically, we can have some crazy tiebreakers. I know I saw up to 7 possible tiebreakers of ways that we could even get some other teams up there.
Yeah, just the way that C9 has dropped off has been super weird. I mean, a lot of teams do, and it usually feels like it's to Azale's point. You know, it's less like they just became worse laners. I feel like that's usually not how that, you know, those drop offs happen, which is why it's surprising and why I'm sketched out. And like you said, though, luckily they have a really easy strength of schedule. TSM, who tied them this weekend with a great game, and they're on a 4-0 streak, has to beat Golden Guardians and TL, potentially, assuming C9 goes 2-0, to continue trying to take away that tiebreaker, or to get to the tiebreaker, to get the bye. It's a pretty tough road.
Specifically, how do you guys feel about Niski? And we're just looking at laning phase now compared to previously. Because previously, I was like, oh my, like he's smashing it. He picks counter matchups like Pantheon, super aggressive, plays with Blabber super well. Gets to roam around, but we've seen a big drop off in the mid jungle synergy for Cloud9 specifically.
He's never been, at least for me, like, yeah, he gets counter picks and could play aggressively, but it was never about like slamming lane. It was a lot of times like
obviously
he and Blabber would be good and then roam around. The weirder thing is like the roaming hasn't been impressive.
Yeah.
Because that's always what we associate with him, and like him getting solo killed by Demonte. And that could happen, you know, in the first couple of weeks, and I would shrug it off because I know later he'd be up topside making something happen. But then Demonte's matching him on TP roams, and he's not getting anything done anymore, it feels like, which is why it's so weird.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like champion base or meta. Like, I know I've seen the Cloud9 people say, like, oh, they just think they have a wrong read on the meta or whatever. I don't think that excuses, like, you know, some of the individual, like, some of the errors and stuff. But the Niski stuff is weird because it does feel like, you know, he never had incredible laning stats or anything other than, like, you know, his forward percentage and whatnot was good, but it was like CST was never astounding or anything. But it does just feel like he's struggling to get out of lane. And I don't know if that's just because people are bringing Sindra into him more, or like something like that that's going on, and have to kind of dig into it and look at some of the champion stuff. Well, but it just feels like
their picks. It's their picks that they're choosing for him that I'm referring to. You know, Azir, Zoe, Sindra. But
Zoe has been one of his biggest all year, right? Like, yeah. C9 was spamming Zoe Ezreal in spring, and he was still everywhere, like, on that champion. So to me, that, like, it's not the issue on that. It just feels like it's something to do with the play, or maybe just to do with the fact that him and Blabber aren't being able to create those advantages as much together. Because a lot of it was Blabber has a jungle advantage, uses that advantage, you know, with mid lane, or they're doing 2v2s and things like that. He's picking up waves while Nisqy's roaming. That part of their gameplay seems to be missing now for me. And that's why, like, a lot of how I feel is to do with stuff in the jungle. Like, when I think about this whole year, like how dominant Cloud9 has been, largely it has been around Blabber being the most dominant jungler we've, like, ever seen in NA, right? Like, getting these crazy leads, working well with his lanes to snowball and dives and snowball around mid and take objectives and stuff. And, you know, I'm kind of concerned by his champion pool because they're playing no Graves. They've played zero Graves games this whole split. They play no Nidalee. This is something that I tweeted about, but it's like, the first three games of the split, they got Olaf. After that, it has only been unbanned one game where they were on red side and the other team first picked it. So they have gotten access to Olaf zero times after the first three games. They don't pick Graves. They don't pick Nidalee. So you're very limited in your, like, kind of like dominant carry style counter jungling, you know, junglers. There's not actually, like, a lot left in the pool. So, like, I feel like maybe they've been figured out a little bit like that. Like, I just don't think you can do the same things on Volibear and Trundle and Sett that you can do on some of these other champions. And I feel like it's maybe not making the best use out of Blabber's skill set.
I think Volibear is really powerful, and I think the Volibear picks have been good. Like, you can do a lot. You can create a lot of pressure early on with Volibear, and you can create dives and stuff. He's not as farm heavy, but his clear is actually still really good. Like, you have plenty of AoE. Even like Cinderhulk, your Q procs the explosion for Cinderhulk. That plus an E coming down just insta clears Raptors for him. Like Volibear is I don't have any problem with that pick, really.
But what does an advantage on Volibear do for the team in competitive? That's my problem. You're going tank, and it's like you're up 10 CS or something. It doesn't do anything. Like,
see, the problem for me is not the pick, because the pick does a lot. Like, you dive turrets, you can counter jungle, you can 2v2 skirmish extremely well. To me, it has been the execution. So if the Volibear game, like, where he Volibear ults into the enemy team and then Speak of ults him back with Sett, and you just have this comical bear jumping forward. Like, this is a bear that has bonus HP now getting dunked on your entire team. That is where I'm seeing the critical errors from Cloud9 is the execution, where I'm like, what is the team fight setup that you think, like, solo engage Volibear? This guy just has a single target stun into a team that has Sett, and you're all grouped up right behind him. Broken Blade lands a great stun to keep them there. But to me, I'm focusing more on the actual execution from C9.
It's I can see both. I definitely agree the execution's a bigger problem, but, like, Blabber's always feels like he's been at his best when he is on a champion that's going to be a bit of a carry on in its own right, even going back to his Kindred days or his Nocturne days when he was more substituting in. Olaf is like that. If he gets far enough ahead, he just dives backline solo with, like, whatever supportive champs dumping their abilities on him, and he kind of wins the team fights himself. Volibear has an amazing skill set of tools to help your team and get ahead, and, like you're saying, do all these dives and stuff, but Volibear, like you're saying, jumping in, pressing R at an 80 carry is almost never going to get a kill if the enemy team is kind of around them. And I feel like that's maybe some of the bigger comp, like, you know, meta problems with Blabber, maybe, is, like, if he's not playing something that has the ability to team fight and actually kill things on its own, he's going to struggle. I still think that the execution, some of these other things we've identified, are more pressing.
Execution is huge, and I'm not trying to discount that. And I'm also not trying to say Volibear is a bad champion. All I'm trying to say is that I think these picks do not make use of the unique skill set that Blabber has. Because I think Blabber, better than any other jungler in the whole league, can take over a game with a lead when he is playing, you know, like, carry style champions, right? He has shown us that. You know, he has had, like, a friggin' 80% win rate. He has been so dominant on these champions. You know, Volibear is great. Trundle's great. Sett's great. But I just think when you have this guy with his skills that you would rather have him have that 20 CS lead on Graves and, you know, and be like one-shotting the 80 carry or something, you know, like doing the kind of things that he can do that I think other players can't. Because to me, I just don't see a big difference between Blaber on Volibear and Blaber and someone else on Volibear, right? Like Wiggly on Volibear or whatever. Like, doesn't feel like,
okay, let's.
So like, yes, there is a big difference as far as like pathing and stuff, but I'm just talking about like team fighting and whatnot. Like the difference is so much smaller, right? Yes, there is like a level of skill, but like Volibear is so simple, and the ways that you can actually like solo win a team fight, like very, very few, if any.
Yeah. And the reason I started the conversation with bringing up Niski is because obviously we pointed so many times to Blaber being the key component that you're talking about playing in that way, invading, having Niski right behind him. And yeah. Niski had been playing more champs that easily play into that style of push wave roam, or even sometimes he would just give up the wave and roam with him. And Azir and Syndra and those types of things for him. He seems like he, if the champ is not, you know, more designed for it, obviously it's going to be more difficult to play into that style. And they did get their two, you know, big wins on the Galio games for him, which is, I'm like, all right, you know, that's exactly what I'm thinking of when you think of that mid jungle duo. But they got some stuff to clean up, you know, heading in. Let's talk about some of the other ones.
Yes,
Team sir. Liquid basically have one of the buys locked up. They're sitting pretty at the top. You know, basically the old kings have returned.
Coach of the split, Jet, bringing them up to first place.
I mean, they would have to go 0-2, and the other two teams would have to 2-0, and they would have to lose a tiebreaker. Like, it's pretty much guaranteed that they have a bye.
Yeah, one of their matches
so
is immortal.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Interestingly, I think if they go 2-0, they beat TSM, and they go 15-3, that is the best record that they've ever had in regular season, which is kind of crazy to think that they're in a pretty good position to do that. I mean, the TSM game is pretty close, and maybe we'll talk about that a little bit, but like, this team has so quietly become, or been, I guess, the as good as all the other TLs that we've seen. I think it looks different to me. I think there are things you can identify that, you know, compared to the previous four-time back-to-back-to-back-to-back winners or whatever. But it's still, it's just insane that they are have amassed this record.
I think Broxah's last weekend was great because I know that you know, that is one thing that a lot of people were pointing to. You know, the things about the quietly getting to the top, where people, the detractors were saying Broxah, and they were saying, you know, the slower pace of their games. But Broxah's Volibear and his Graves game, proactive in both. You know, even the able to get the early kills in the second Graves one and the gank for mid for LeBlanc.
Yeah,
one of the kills was an ult over the wall snipe, but he was there, Zale.
Yeah, I mean, the Volibear game, he ganked mid one time, and then he farmed, and then he did.
Volibear, boom, stun.
He didn't even go in his opponent's jungle or anything. Like, I still have some issues with how Broxah is playing. I think TL has been a great team. I think it's almost nothing to do with Broxah, it feels like. Broxah feels like, I'm just being honest. I think Broxah feels like, you know, a mid or lower half jungler as far as his performance this split. He has not impressed me. You know, and I was actually a really big Broxah fan, you know, with him coming over to NA. I was so excited. We talked about this a ton. Like, I was so hyped. He just hasn't shown it to me. I think that there's a lot of junglers that have played just as well as him or are outperforming him. I think that he you know, he has been, you know, doing fine. He has not been, like, horrible by any means. Jensen is absolutely popping off. Core JJ, I think, is the MVP. And, you know, tactical and impact have been great. So, like, I think he has been surrounded by a really solid team. They play slow, so maybe this is what they're asking for from him. Maybe they don't want him to go crazy or whatever. But, like, I just think that there's so many games where he hasn't really had that much involvement, even from, like, positions of power. So I'm still not super impressed with him. I think that that's, like, maybe partially why TL feels a little bit different in their dominance than they have in the past is that, like, it felt like Xsmithy played more of a major role a lot of the time in getting these leads. Like, when I think of TL of old, when they were slamming, it was like Xsmithy does like these great ganks down to the bot lane and then double us ahead. And now, like, that's the clear PowerPoint and whatever. It just feels like all the action this time around feels like it's based on Core JJ doing stuff, not Proxah doing stuff.
And I think The only thing I'll say for Brock is he's not making the mistakes that he was making a little bit earlier on. So yeah, even if he's
doing
a
much
bit,
better,
even if he's a little bit less proactive, it's like a small microcosm, I think, for TL as a whole, where they don't make punishable mistakes. Like Broxton might be AFK farming on graves, but he's still 0-0-0. There's no deaths. He's not like done anything stupid to like be in the wrong place. His team's controlling all the drinks because he's there. You know, like that game, I think, was one where people criticized him a lot for very understandable reasons about not getting involved. But at the same time, he's not a lot of other junglers in the league who could have lost that game just by outright
walking into the opponent's jungle and dying while trying to get raptors. Or
and
whatever,
and what you're saying about the difference in play styles, like TL was not always like super fast or anything, but their combined kills per minute in previous splits when they were title winning teams in 2019 spring and summer was, you know, 0.71 and I just lost it. I suck at this. So like there was 0.71 summer 2019. So like they were still at least somewhat faster then in terms of the amount of kills that they were getting. So I think that's why people feel like it's a lot slower and less.
What's it now?
Now it's sorry, I meant to say that. Now it's 0.58.
Yeah, that's significantly slower. Yeah.
So like, and they're the slowest in the league, which is, I think, the other thing. Whereas before they were third, and you know, even when they had a lot slower one in summer last year or spring last year, it was 0.57. There were other teams below them. There were three teams below them because it was just a slower meta. Yeah. So like, I think that's where the I understand the criticism and they themselves have talked about wanting to be more aggressive. So it's not like they've come out and been like, no, we want to do this. Cause I think messaging matters a lot too. The fact that their players have said we're trying to get more aggressive, but at this point they're so solid fundamentally that I'm not really worried about them at all. And I think that they have a pretty good chance in playoffs of reaching finals.
I mean, they're just
on the road
crushing all the lower teams now. Yeah. That is one thing that makes me like really confident they'll go far, especially if you're first seed, you have the bye. And then I believe you have your choice of opponents coming out of that first round. Right. So it's like there, it feels like almost no chance of you losing those types of games. Like they are just having such clean games against the lower tier teams now, where it's like you say, they're just not giving any openings. They're consistently extending their gold leads. They're not doing it in like the like sexiest way by like, you know, slamming them, but they're like stealing away all the jungle. They're not having dumb deaths. Core JJ is incredible. Jensen's a great team fighter. Tactical has been solid. Like everything feels really good. I think this team is looking really, really good. They're so far beyond what they were at the start of the split, where I felt honestly like they were just fluking into a lot of wins. It didn't feel like they were having dominant wins by any means. It felt like they were dependent early on in the season, often on their opponents just throwing games to pick up a lot of those wins. But at this point, you can't make that argument at all. You can make the argument that maybe they're not as dominant as like PCloud9 or whatever. That's totally true. But they just look so clean against the lower half teams. I've got to give them a lot of credit. They've improved, I think, massively throughout the split.
I've been waiting to defend my boy Broxa here for last weekend's performance for a while, because
he
I know you
fine.
Guys
wait we focused, liked him last weekend.
That's what I'm saying. Give him, you are not giving him credit. It was more
fine.
Than fine. Okay, he kills both solo lanes, counter jungles the entire red side.
Are you talking about the Graves game?
Yes, his Graves game, because you guys are like, oh, you know, the farming Graves game.
I think Mark was talking about
kills
the 0-0-0
both solo
Graves
lanes.
Game. He wasn't
Let me
talking
finish.
About this
kills
game.
Both solo lanes, counter juggles the entire red side, gets the dragon and the Rift Herald all by 10 minutes. If I am on a team and I do all of that and you tell me I'm doing fine and I'm just there,
that's
and I'm
a
not
game.
A part of the wins, then I am pissed.
that's a good game, but
I was
but
talking
like,
about the one from we 2 weeks
Mark
ago.
Was talking about the 0-0-0.
I know you're great. Talking about the one from 2 weeks ago. I'm just saying you can talk about that one, but you should also get credit for the most recent
had,
one.
He had a really good game this weekend. I think the Fall of Bear game was still fine. He ganked once, it worked mid lane, and then he AFK farmed and his team won. like I'm not flaming Broxa. I just don't think that he has been on the level of some of the other junglers, and I don't think he has been the cause for most of their wins. And I think that's true. Their team is great. And they're looking really good. And not every player on your team has to be the best player in the league to win, right? And Broxa, we also know, has that ceiling to where he could be doing that, right? And if Broxa just starts coming out and playing like he used to and just slamming early games, and you still have CoreJJ and Jensen and all these guys who are playing as well as they are, then all of a sudden this team is like an international threat, and you know, and they're just going to crush everyone. But I haven't seen that yet from Broxa, and I'm still hoping I will.
And I'm just saying, I know it was against CLG, but he did that in the in their game versus CLG. So you have seen it.
Yeah.
And you can
You've seen it. Don't try and deny it.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
Hasn't happened a
I'm
lot,
just saying
right?
you've seen it, you know. TSM is a really exciting topic as well as we continue on the ones looking for these buys. And a lot of it, I know everyone's already talking about, you know, Bjergsen, these MVP performances. But they have needed the rest of the team to step up around him. And this is a team that consistently has these big peaks and will get you super excited, but you always need to be a little bit worried still too, because I'm never quite sure, since they haven't shown the consistency to make me, you know, have that true faith, believing in it, you know, heading into playoffs, heading into best of fives. I am once again getting excited. Obviously, they had 4 wins in a row, big streak for them, and Bjergsen is definitely playing extremely well, and the rest of the members are stepping up. I've loved the addition of Treats. He's been very good for them as well, despite the debate around his black shields, which I think he answered pretty well.
I had his back. I was on the AD defending. Yeah,
I know you're on the front lines there, Mark. Right there with them.
I think it's actually funny. I'm always a little slow to like buy into teams, whether they're good or bad. Like I probably hold on a little bit too long to teams that are in a slump, and I probably don't, you know, catch on to the streaks quite. I'm just like a give me data kind of guy, and so. TSM with the 4-0, because they were 2-0 last weekend, and I was still a little critical of them. And I was like, well, you beat CLG and Dig. It's not really that impressive. Mm-hmm. Then they beat EG and C9. And in my head, I'm like, there we go. Let's go, TSM. I'm hyped. And I was like, I was getting so pumped.
You're
going
to do a second half thing, aren't you?
Yeah. And then I did the second half look, and I was like, wait, EG and C9
2-5.
Or 2-5 in the back half. So if I'm supposed to be buying into streaks faster, I should buy into EG and C9 suck. And these aren't impressive wins. And I'm like, wait a minute. When's the last time TSM beat a, you know, quote unquote good team?
The funniest thing about that is, so CLG, so if you want to actually look at those 4 teams, theoretically, those are the four worst teams in the league in the second half. Because CLG is 1-6 in the second half, worst record overall. Cloud9 and EG are both 2-5. They're tied for 8th, essentially. And then Dignitas is in a tie for 5th in that next little grouping above. So
same with 100 Thieves. And so,
the argument that they only beat the absolute worst teams in the league, which is really funny to say about C9. But.
Yeah, it's funny, and I don't believe it, by the way. So TSM fans get mad, I'm just saying that, like, I was like, I defeated my own argument a little bit when I went back, and I was like, when's the last time they beat a team that I actually think is playing well right now?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I have to go far back. But I do think they actually are good. Like, this is mostly memeing. Bjergsen's been super good all split. I'd say Doublelift's actually been pretty good all split too.
I think so.
He's been a little bit higher variance, but he's always like making plays. He's always being aggressive. And the two bigger problems. Oh, you want to hop in?
Just because we had a this or that slide with who would your first all LCS team AD carry be, and Doublelift was not on the slide. It was Sven, Tactical, or FBI. I'm just really curious to interject within our TSM conversation. Where would you currently vote Doublelift?
So I did a bot lane power ranking. And I had him around 4th because I had Sven and then FBI and then like Tactical and Doublelift had the same like stats. They were just
Can I flame your bot lane rankings, by the way?
Go for it, dude.
So here's my issue with the bot lane rankings. And this is why I think it like, for me, that segment didn't work that well, is I think it needs to be a dual lane thing. If you're going to rate early game, it's so much like a product of who you're playing with, I think, too, right? You have to, like, especially if you're doing it just statistically and not just like based on like eye test of like how the player is moving and stuff, then I think it's so reliant upon your lane partner, their champion pool and picks and stuff, right? So it was like Doublelift, if I recall, had like a 4 out of 10 early game or something rating, which like I think like when I watch him, I feel like he's playing as well as anyone in laning phase. I actually think his laning is really good.
If you're gonna flame my list, you better get the numbers right. He was an 8 in early game.
Oh, okay, my mistake. I guess I had him back. Was his late game rating bad then?
His late game rating was a 6.
Okay. My mistake. But like, you know, so I just think I don't even really have a problem with the ratings that much. It was more just like, I think it's such a product of who you're playing with. And that's something that, like, as much as it maybe sounds a little bit BM to his teammates, like, I think that Biofrost and Treats haven't been playing, you know, nearly on the level of some of the other guys. So it's like, when I see Tactical up that high, I'm like, bro, Tactical is playing with Core JJ, who is, I think, like, to me, like, it's not even close. I think he's the MVP and it's not close. Like, I actually think this guy is playing out of his mind. And
I said for the this or that slot, I was like, all right, Tactical's out of there. He's got Core JJ.
Yeah, like, so put Doublelift with Core JJ, who's doing better. Because I think Doublelift is still performing better than Tactical. Like,
what? Doublelift and Core JJ? That would be crazy if that was a bottom lane.
So the funny thing is, I've said all this stuff. I've said, like Tactical is getting carried by Core JJ.
Yeah.
And I said in that segment that I'm actually rating his
but all anyone does is look at the numbers, Mark.
That's their fault. Azale. All right. One of the reasons his rating wasn't 8 for laning phase was because he's dealt with a support swap, and I don't think Biofrost was playing incredibly well. And so like, that was part of the reasons that his like maintaining a good CSD, I think he was second or third highest in the league.
Early game is support difference. Late game is team difference.
Right. But that's my point is, if you're performing with two different supports, one of which got benched, you must be playing pretty well. And Core JJ, I think, is carrying Tactical laning phase. I think outside laning phase, I'm actually pretty impressed by Tactical and his team fighting and stuff, which is why.
Yeah, he's been
whatever.
Good.
We tangented. TSM, Doublelift, playing well.
But to answer your point, Kobe, I think he should be in the top three for sure. Yeah. As far as like where exactly I would vote him, I think that's hard because I haven't really, like, I have to really review some of the stuff and dig into the numbers and make sure I can, like, you know, really defend it. But like my feeling is Doublelift has been good all year. I think Doublelift would be in my top two. I still think it's Zven and Doublelift is the best two marksmen in the league based off the eye test. But you know, whether or not I'm gonna still agree with that conclusion after I've dug into it more remains to be seen.
Yeah, one of the things with him that definitely drives a lot of fan sentiment too is there have been big moments, like the, I forget which game it was, but he got hit by a binding in the top of the map with cleanse available. And just kind of sits it and then just dies in the pool. And
that
I
was
know
funny,
that,
but that was somewhat defensible because it was like, anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah. But he, even afterwards, was meaning himself
really
on it about it. Yeah. He was like, oh my God.
Looked really, really dumb.
All this stuff. And I know that people are also hyper focused now after the Bang situation, where we're looking at the supports and the people playing around the 80 carries afterwards of, are they playing like the AD carry is trying to bait something, or and another member of the team doesn't provide the defenses that you are expecting in this scenario? High had a pretty good one, you know, last year with Bang, where they focused on it and we got really in depth with the replay. For one of the big stories that we lightly touched on for TSM, and the big discussion has been obviously after that game were the black shields for Treats, and we kind of memed on it and moved forward. But for people that weren't as deep in and didn't, you know, follow that story, there were a bunch of ash arrows that hit Doublelift regardless of Treats being next to him, and everyone's like, oh my god, why is he so late on these black shields? Because in some of the fights he does end up shielding Doublelift afterwards anyway. And that's kind of a look where people are like, oh, it's just late, right? He came out talking about, yes, there was the dragon fight where like he saved it for Broken Blade and put it on the Aurelia instead. And there were a bunch of situations where the Ash Arrow is coming and the DPS for their opponents is not close enough to follow up. So, you know, Blabber and Licorice are kind of baited into these engages and they're a little bit too far from the team. And then TSM's able to win the team fight afterwards. And Treats even was like, ask Blabber and Licorice how they felt playing when I didn't black shield the arrows and then there was black shield later in the fight. He did admit, and I was having a real hard time buying the one at the top inhibitor where double fat flashed. And I was like, and he was like, all right, if I had one bad one, it was that one where double F had to flash.
That's
so
what I was going
to
say.
He did admit there was
some where they seemed bad, but I haven't gone back and reviewed them.
There's definitely some where I was having a hard time and he admitted that one. So
yeah,
he admitted
that, like, I'm not saying I played perfectly, but his approach was this like more delayed black shield thing. And I mean, that's a lot of people talk about that in League in general, right? Is like that half the game isn't even actually really reaction, it's prediction. you know, when people have insane plays where it looks like they flash something, it's because they were expecting the flash the whole time. And so if you're in the mindset that I'm not going to black shield Ash arrows, you're probably going to make a couple mistakes where you're like, I should have black shielded that one, but I was already in the mindset of hold and wait. Yeah. So, like, you know, it just changes what your mistakes look like.
Yeah. I mean, I know he talked about like how he wanted to say black shield for Aurelia sometimes, and sometimes he's doing it later for whatever, but it is like, it looked funny. There was a couple that I think were bad where like he got Ash arrowed and then black shielded like right after. I'd have to review it, but that's like what I have in my head from casting. But like, I don't really care that much about that unless that becomes like a consistent problem where it's like, you're playing Braum and your shield is always late, you know, and things like that. Then I think that matters a lot. But from what I've seen when he played Braum and everything, he like always had the E up in time. It wasn't like, you know, slow on that. So he can have a bit of a
pass.
He's
got good fingers for sure.
I think he's been really good.
Yeah, yeah. I think so too. I don't think he's been like dominant, but he's been pretty like mistake free, and their laning has looked pretty good. You know, overall, I think TSM has improved a lot. I think Bjergsen has been a monster over the last couple of games. That is something that is really working for TSM. It feels like it's been a while since I've remembered, you know, games where Bjergsen is just like that much like, we will win this game, and like just, you know, hulking out. Like the Zillion game, as much as like the scoreline isn't that crazy, like that game was insane. I thought he played so well. Like he was so good about playing on the line of like, you can't ignore him because he's too close for you to ignore him, but he's also too far away from you to ever actually turn on him and get him. And he's like buying so much time for his teammates to come back in to like TP in, or setting up a TP flank, or himself like being able to find a way to TP back in and always having his ults on time. He never missed a single ult. Like he was just on it. Like that was a sick game.
It's one of those things too, like I'm just going to complain a little bit, but like people always flame like the player of the week stuff. And it's like, if you give someone a big KDA, so they're like, oh, you're just looking at their stats. And then like you give it to Bjergsen for that, like that game. And then the second
then
one,
they're like, look at the stats.
It's like, he didn't get any kills in that game with Zillion. It's like, did you watch the game? Like he played great.
I think everybody agrees that Bjergsen's been playing super well though. And everyone's already starting to talk about him for possible MVP candidate. I think one of the bigger things is Broken Blade on specific champions, like the Aurelia that he's super known for, because Broken Blade has been one of the other ones that has been the big question mark for TSM. It's been Speak and Broken Blade. You know, are they having a good game, bad game, determines a lot for it. And for Broken Blade, I'm becoming more and more of focusing on what champion he is playing. Cause I have heard from a lot of the other pro top laners, you know, specifically like his Gangplank does not get, you know, nearly the DPS out of, you know, using his Trial by Fire a lot, or even some of the barrel chains and stuff like that. So I think that's going to be something they have to pay pretty close attention to in the best of fives. But we have already hit an hour and we haven't moved on to either of the other brackets. So let's quickly hit on FlyQuest here, so we can give everybody a
One little thing on Broken Blade. My concern for Broken Blade, like I agree with your points completely, but like my concern is actually more just these like big errors still. Like I still have so many games in my mind where it's just like, what's Broken Blade doing? He's wandering through the river. Oh, Broken Blade's dead. I guess they lose the dragon or the baron or the Rift Herald or the whatever. Like there's a lot of those, and that is my biggest concern for Broken Blade actually, and has been, it feels like, this whole split long.
His Aurelia was freaking fantastic, and he got a big, you know, four-man stun at the dragon to set up the you know, Speaker's ultimate. So I was happy to see both of them, who had been getting a lot of flame, be the two that makes this big, you know, big TSM fight. But
teamwork and friendship.
Yeah,
that's what I was saying. It was my transition for FlyQuest. Teamwork and friendship. I'm stoked on them. I think that they're really good. I have to remind, like, everyone has to remember like their record and like how they've been struggling. MASH was statistically, and I think for a lot of eyeball check people, you know, like
for basically a lot of eyeballs out there, wasn't
a lot of
nice?
Eyeballs were watching. A lot of people would probably agree was basically the worst bot laner in the league. After All Tech got subbed out, you can debate, oh, maybe it's Apollo, maybe it's 6A, maybe it's this, but like he was in that, you know, like he was not playing well, and was a definite weak point on the team. Turtle's been a lot better, and this is the lineup that made finals last split. They're actually have a great win rate with this lineup.
5-2 second half.
Yeah. I think it, in a lot of ways, you kind of need to wipe your mind from the MASH days, because it's just a totally different lineup for me.
I like
that. I know that sounds.
Wipe your mind. I'm just imagining getting your fingers in there, really cleaning out that gunk.
Yeah, you know, you get one of those Lysol wipes, and you just wipe that that mash out there. And I think that they're actually a great team. I don't think that they can realistically get a bye, but I think they are a big playoff threat because both C9 or TSM, they both need to drop one game. And then they need to, then FlyQuest needs to 2-0 just to tie. And like, I just don't think that's going to happen with how C9's strength of schedule is and stuff. So I do think that they'll miss the bye, but I think they're a big threat come playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I think they've been very good overall. You know, Santorin, I mean, has probably been the biggest standout for me. I think Santorin has been fantastic. He's been, you know, one of, if maybe not like, yeah, one of the best junglers for sure throughout the split. And I think especially recently, he has been really, really good. I think he has really smart, creative pathing. His level two ganks and stuff, people are pointing out a lot because he has been able to pull off, you know, quite a few of those, even on tank junglers when people aren't expecting them. So definitely a lot of credit deserved by him. And I think PoE has been really, really solid and pretty dominant for the team. But Turtle stepping up too, like his Ashe game this last weekend, I think, you know, playing against it was like EG or something, but they had this like really heavy dive comp with Rumble and all these different champions, and it seemed like it would be a pretty hard game for Ashe, but you know, Turtle didn't even build defensively and never died the whole time, so like I've been pretty impressed with him.
Must have hit like 7 Ashe arrows as well. Yeah. You know, throughout mm-hmm. the duration of the game. I also think it's pretty good for him. Caitlyn is back in. I always remember his first game subbing in for TSM.
Pentakill
with Caitlyn. D-Man's like, are you watching your Chaos? Because your job is on the line. You're fired.
The trash can.
Turtles,
you're fired.
Never show your face here again. You're like, oh my God.
I was like, hell yeah, hype. So I think the meta is also, you know. Yeah.
And Jinx alt got a buff, so we know Wild Turtle's in there. Yeah.
Tristana got a buff, going to crit 6 times in a row again with 25%, whatever it was.
All right. The other upper bracket kind of race here. And technically, you know, there are still a lot of options open if these top teams lose out. You know, Golden Guardians, there is a way that they could even move up
it's
there
like
to one of the
one
bye.
Million.
But
every team would lose every game.
Exactly. It's a ridiculous scenario. So that's why they're down here in our just upper bracket part of the race. But Golden Guardians, again, there's so much hype. We've talked about in the last couple of weeks. I had always been impressed by Susie, who he's set games specifically, but now his a couple of his other champions, he's also having good, really good performances. So I'm definitely giving a wider berth to the possibilities for this bottom lane and talking about them as a package. We keep on highlighting the stats here for FBI, and people really remember like, oh, the Aphelios games at the beginning of the split where you're like, ah, oh, yeah, 200 years, you know, they keep, you know, picking Aphelios for him and he gets these big flamethrower plays, but he's been really good.
He has. And I think Hui has been good on more than just the Aphelios, or rather more than just the set for sure. Right.
Yeah. Like starting to branch out there.
Yeah. Like the Morgana game, I think was really, really nice. I think he's like pretty willing to kind of get a bit more creative. Obviously he has a lot of mid lane experience, so he can probably play some mages if those get a little bit popular down there. But I mean, Golden Guardians, not only are they 5-2 in the second half, so they're only one game behind TL as the team who has the best second half record. They're 8-3 in their last 11. So yes, their record is not insane, but over the last stretch of games, they have been one of the best teams, you know, one of the best teams record wise, at least in the league. So I think they are a team to certainly watch out for in the playoffs. Like, they're not going to get a bye. I don't think that's going to happen, but I definitely think this is a team that could go, you know, semifinals potentially with the right matchup or, you know, a really good day, could even go further. So this is like I think the best split Golden Guardians has ever had. You know, if they don't completely fall apart in the final weekend, they're going to have the best record they've ever had. They've never gone above 9-9. I think they should pick up a win. What were you going to say, Mark?
I was going to say that, and they've never won a playoff series, and I would be shocked if they don't win a playoff series this lineup either.
Yeah, I think that they can win a playoff series. I think that they're going to have the best record ever. I think this is the strongest any Golden Guardians team has ever looked, because I think they're actually better than what their record is, because they were struggling a lot at the start before they kind of figured out some more things. So I think, you know, as far as the org goes, a lot to be happy about. You know, the sky is definitely not falling for Golden Guardians. You know, things are looking pretty nice. It's more than just closer. You know, early in the split, I think that's all anyone wanted to talk about was closer. It's like, well, they suck, but closer though. And you know, now I think a lot of people are talking about FBI pretty positively. You know, I think I saw Tim from Oracle's Elixir even making, you know, arguments that FBI should be in the MVP discussion. You know, I've seen people even picking him up on that. You guys had him very highly ranked as far as your bot lane tier list, number two, just behind Sven. So, like, you know, there's a lot working for this team right now. I think Hanser has been solid. So
Hanser is the second best laning stats in the league for all top laners, basically.
He always has really good CSD. He just doesn't miss farm. And I know that sounds funny to say, but it's like pros miss farm. And especially in top lane, if you mismanage your wave, you can just sometimes not even have access to the wave to the farm. Hanser is always so good. And throughout his whole career has been like so good about any CS he can hit, he does hit. And he's really, really good at laning as a result.
I think that they have a super high ceiling. When we talk about, you have top and bot who are arguably almost best in class laners, right? Then you have Closer who's playing super well. I think that they still need to work on some of their mid to late game and stuff like that, but super high ceiling. And the same way you need to wipe your brain of some of the stuff with FlyQuest, you got to wipe your brain of those Nidalee comps that they were, that led them to start 1-3.
The Nidalee Cassio or whatever it was.
Yeah. And then like Nidalee Jace, you know, they had a lot of these like really fragile comps. If you take those out, super good. I'm a big Golden Guardians fan. I think they definitely are closer to those other four.
How do you get access to
your
brain to wipe it?
You don't just have a little.
Just you have like a little brain.
Getting with
door.
The Q-tip.
So also my thing with the brain wiping is, if you're gonna have selective brain wiping for one team, then you got to be open to having brain wiping for all the teams.
Yeah, why can't we just brain wipe the last couple of weeks for Cloud9 and they're still undefeated?
Because it's still going on. Like it's gonna build up again. You got to wait for the build up to finish before you wipe it. I think the build up's done for FlyQuest in Golden Curse.
It has to harden in there.
Yeah. You don't want it. If you premature wipe, it's just gonna build up again.
So I don't want to say that you have already caster cursed them, Azale, but the Golden Guardians next two games this weekend, RTSM and EG, very well could just end 9-9 again.
It's possible. EG's been stinking it up, though, so I like their chances against EG.
They're still in the build-up phase. You can't wipe EG yet.
I mean, EG's in that conversation for upper bracket, right? Like, because it's essentially what's going to happen is we talked about four teams for the bye, right? Two of those teams are going to be in the upper bracket, the teams that don't make it for the bye. The bottom two teams are going to be in the lower bracket, right? You know, so that's 7th, 8th. But everything from 3rd to 6th is going to be, you know, upper bracket starting, right? And that's going to be Golden Guardians basically for sure. And then EG and 100 Thieves are both in there also. Those teams are a couple games behind Golden Guardians. So Golden Guardians, you know, not really likely to have to worry about anything. I think they've already secured that. But EG, I mean, EG is sitting at 7-9 with a 2-5 second half. So they have really not been able to kind of make it work. At this point, I'm curious if EG is just going to swap back to their previous roster, if they're even considering that. Because I felt like it was honestly really weird to swap away from Kumo and Jizuke in the first place. Like, I love Golden Glue. Huni's an exciting player. But, like, it just seemed bizarre to me. Like, I know Huni is going to become a resident next split. But Kumo is a young North American player. I actually thought he improved remarkably from spring to summer. His laning was abysmal in spring. And in summer, he was actually laning quite well. You know, there was other issues. I'm not saying he's a perfect player, but there was like clear improvement for a very young player. Jizuke, you know, obviously had some pretty bad games, but in spring, EG had those same kind of struggles as well and was able to actually turn it around and become a very solid team once they got things a bit under control. So I was honestly surprised by the move in the first place. And at this point, it just hasn't worked. You know, since the roster swap, they've played quite a few games with it now, and it's just not looking that good.
So let me pitch you on some a hot caller on Hotline League had this. I love the idea. Okay. Bench Bang, put in Deathly, Huni, and Jizuke. Double coin flip.
You love the idea of benching Bang?
This was a joke. Okay. Double coin flip. That was the whole thing. I don't love the idea of benching Bang, but to Zale's point, like, you don't look good. You're not going to make worlds if you don't drastically improve. Because those top five teams that we talked about all actually look legitimately good. This is not spring where you have Cloud9 and a bunch of crap, and then, you know, FlyQuest and EG are the best. I think Golden Guardians is more legit, TL is more legit, TSM is more legit. You can't, even if you got back to the level that you were playing at in spring when you were almost the finals contending team, that wouldn't make you finals again.
And you need top three to go to Worlds, right? Like, they're 2-4 with their roster swap since they went to Golden Glue and Huni. The only games they've won is Huni GP, which he's absolutely popped off on, but like, I don't know that they're going to get Hooney GP anymore.
Right. So, like, I think you need to do something different. I don't think you can – maybe – I'm not saying it has to be bench bang, but, like, something has to go because I just – I'm off this train for sure.
It just feels so similar to the other iteration where we were like, okay, if Jazuke's on Echo or LeBlanc or ex-champion, then I'm hyped for this game. But if I see it and he's on AP Kog'Maw or something like that or Karma, then you're like, oh, it's a big yikes. Now we're coming into it and we're approaching it with, oh my God, these teams, they have to ban Rumble and Gangplank or else they're screwed. You know, Hooney's getting his champ. It's over, kid. And then we see the one where his Camille game and you're like, oh my God, is it a big yikes? Oh my God, we have to ban Rumble Gangplank, or is it actually a big yikes on EG? Oh shit, they banned Rumble Gangplank. Now what? Because the Camille game where he like flanks an Orianna at 50% just gets killed before the fight even starts, or the Kennen game then after that with the Gunblade into Malphite, I don't think he got any good flanks off. Maybe there was one in there, but it's a similar scenario for me where you got to predict EG games after you see champ select.
I felt like at least with Jazuke too, when he got ahead, he stayed ahead and would act like he would like int games, you know, but at least when he didn't do that and was actually popping off, he would continue popping off. Whereas Hooney, we showed some stats where like when he's ahead, actually they lose those games because he like gets too crazy or something, you know, like it's a small sample size. So I don't want to pull too much from it, but it was one of those things where I was like,
it's like so insulting.
Yeah. It's like when you fall behind, you win because you're on GP.
All right.
Yeah. Jazuke, though, I just feel like they should put him back in. I don't know. I mean, I also think that, like, if you're looking towards the future of your org, I don't get why you're not playing Kumo long term. I think the fact that he showed actually a lot of improvement between spring and summer, I think if you're looking long term, everyone knows the key success in North America is find three really good residents.
Hooney's going to be a resident, though. Hooney's going to count as a resident.
I know, but it's like, I just feel like if you're building towards the future, there's one player who has been the same for a long time, and there's one player who's still developing. But yeah. I don't know.
I mean, there's one player who's been to World Finals.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's going to become a resident. I'm just saying that's the other side of of the argument. I forgot what I was going to say.
You were going to move and transition us down to CLG, digging them. Oh, you want to talk 100 Thieves?
Oh, well, they're the last team on the cusp, right? I mean, we can almost bunch them all together. 100 Thieves you know, has been doing a bit better than some of those other teams in the second half. They're sitting at, I think it was 3-4. But they are right now one game up on CLG. You know, so they're two games up on Immortals and Dig. So they're pretty safe as far as their playoff spot goes. You know, as long as they get like one win, they're for sure in. But I mean, it really is that kind of like bottom grouping, right? 100 Thieves, CLG, Immortals, and Dig. CLG is the one that's really in trouble because they're 1-6 in the second half and they're only one game up on Immortals and Dig.
Yeah, I think for me, 100 Thieves, I think that they'll still make the playoffs, but I'm after that, you know, in hot start when they beat C9, we now realize that that's not an accomplishment. And I just don't see them being able to win a playoff series versus any of the teams in the upper brackets, save for maybe EG. So I'm kind of off that train.
So here's my question for you then. Out of any of these four teams at the bottom, is there any team here that you would believe in winning a playoff series out of 100 Thieves, CLG, Immortals, and Dig? Because I definitely, like, the only one you have maybe convinced me of is Dig on a good day or something. Because at least Dig has had a decent second half. I mean, 100 Thieves had an okay second half. CLG is absolutely in the dumpster, and it feels like Immortals is there with them.
I'm with you, man. I think Dig, I would have said yes when they were playing Lorlo and they had that kind of hot streak. And then that's completely come apart. And not only has it come apart like, oh, they're losing games now, but their play style seems to have completely flipped around. Like, they were scrapping teams, they were taking fights and winning, and now they just like slow bleed out and hardly ever do anything.
Yeah,
I feel like 100 Thieves is clearly out of this grouping the nominee for me.
They shouldn't even be in, like, I put 100 Thieves in like they're in playoffs for sure, good for them, versus these other three. Like,
yeah, they were at the bottom of the next grouping. I just kind of tag them on.
Yeah, I just kind of brush them down with the other ones. I was actually excited for this team, you know.
In their wins, they look really good.
Yeah, and the losses, for me, the losses look like they either set up really well in the early game and then they have one of those big blunders, or there are a lot of losses. They've also been able to kind of pull back some of the games. So, and I always really like the possibility of playoff patch. They're buffing Jackson Fiora and all this stuff, and they've got someday. And contracts has really gone a long way as far as enabling, you know, specific strategies for them. Like if they have someday on Camille, you know, camping on for this top side, getting someday involved in the counter jungling, and getting Ryoma on Galio and those sorts of things. Those have been the games for 100 Thieves that have got me really hyped up for it. And so I still see that as a possibility with 1016, you know, opening up some more options in the possible champions that they could use to enable strategies like that. That's why I'm like, I vote 100 Thieves.
It is interesting that 100 Thieves, Dig, and Immortals actually all have second half, the same second half record. They're all 3-4. You know, my question and the reason I kind of grouped them in was Mark said he didn't think 100 Thieves could win a playoff series, right? So I was like, do you think 100 Thieves could win a playoff series, or do you just think that they're the best team of that grouping?
I think they could. I mean, I'm looking at like Evil Geniuses, even
that's
possibly
true. I can see those teams beating EG. I can see any of those teams beating EG. But yeah. I don't know, like, because EG probably is going to lose first round, and then maybe one of these teams can pick them up. You know, Dig is also like the other one. Maybe I'll throw into the ring a little bit. Dig has had two of the absolute worst games I think I've seen this whole year. In the ones where they just like didn't do anything the whole game and then lost, like those are horrible games. But in their wins, they still actually look pretty good. So it's kind of weird. Like I don't really understand what's even going on. Like what the thought process is in some of those games where they just don't try anything the whole time. They just wade loose. But their good games still look good. So somewhat similarly to 100 Thieves. I don't think that they have like the same sort of like incredible player that someday is, right? They don't have that one clear star as much. But I still think Dignitas's bot lane has been solid, and I think that they do have the ability to, like, when they're on, look pretty good.
All right, so let's make some predictions then. Who's rounding out the bottom of the playoffs? Because all of them have pretty tough strength of schedules remaining. Dig has C9, 100 Thieves, which is arguably the easiest, but still I don't think they're really favored. Then Immortals has TL and FlyQuest. CLG has C9 and FlyQuest. So pretty tough schedule for all these teams.
I mean, I think CLG is just going to lose both games.
Right, but everyone could just lose both games, and then CLG is still in.
Yeah.
Because they're one game up on the other two.
Yep.
So the question is, can one of these teams steal
a
win?
No, they can't. Well, I guess Dig could lose to 100 Thieves as well. I mean, I think Dig beating 100 Thieves is not without, like, not beyond the realm
doable
of possibility there.
But they need to do that to be able. And then actually,
that
I need to check
like
if CLG has that.
That seems like the best chance, actually.
They're 1-1 with Dig. So, yeah. But otherwise, I'm scared.
Better than
right?
them all, so all losing and CLG just being in by default.
I hope.
Because I think that might be the...
I would bet on that happening.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that would make them 1-11 or something to close out the season.
I kind of agree with you. Because when I'm looking at it, I don't think Dig shouldn't beat Cloud9. You know, Mortals shouldn't beat Liquid for sure. You know, 100 Thieves, Dig, that's like the best shot right there of those bottom teams actually picking up a win, I think. Because, yeah, besides that, the schedules are really hard.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And for Dig, one of the big ones for me isn't just the games that you're referring to, but also their most recent one where they actually got a really big lead with Dardock on Lee Sin popping off. You know, they had the LeBlanc Phoenix. Phoenix was getting solo kills. And then he builds Morel, a Nomicon, and a Banshees. Versus a team that has like Corki and Ashe that like can spam out abilities and pop it, and they aren't able to, you know, side lane and get pressure, and they kind of stall their own game out and end up losing that game where they got this big lead where you think, oh my, yeah, this is Dig again firing on all cylinders. They, you know, they got these crazy early leads. Solo laners are super ahead. That one kind of was the final straw for me where I was like, okay, I'll vote 100 Thieves in their matchup.
Yeah, I like 100 Thieves over them still. I do think 100 Thieves is a better team overall, but I just think that like if there was to be like one of those teams like pushing their way in, it would probably be Dig, just based on schedule. But Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I'll honestly be kind of disappointed if CLG makes it in to playoffs off of everyone losing every game, because I just think that's pretty sad.
And the whole 1-11 thing to get in is just oof.
Yeah, because then you just, no one's going to give them any chance in a playoff series, right? So
quickly, anyway. I want to inject a rumor, okay?
Aha, the Poe Belcher one?
Yes, because since, like, we never get to bring the rumors ourselves, but since someone publicly tweeted it, we can now grab it from the public realm. Dom said, broke the rumor that Poe Belcher is benched for CLG.
Oh, that's bizarre. That seems like their best player
is nuts to me.
That is so weird.
You can switch literally any other player around on that team.
No one's even gonna blink.
And exactly, and I'm fine with it. But what the heck?
I wonder if it's like an attitude thing or something, or maybe it's just like, you know, like I think he generally has a pretty good attitude, but I just wonder, it's like, oh, you're not getting along with coaches, or like there's some frustrations or something, you know, because based off of like eye test, he seems like their best player.
They could get into playoffs. Like, this is week 9. You're on the bumper down here.
It's one of those things where like I have nothing good to say, so don't say anything at all. Bambi quote.
You know,
like,
well, just want to inject that real quick.
No, I think it's brain booming.
But to be fair, even with Poe Belcher, so I don't agree with the change. I do think he's their best player, but they're 1-6 in their last 7. This team looks horrible. They clearly look like the worst team in the second half, right? So even if you make it into playoffs in 8th spot, if you just go 0-3 in your first playoff series, who cares, right? Mm-hmm. So this is maybe them taking the like swing for the fences thing here, see if something else just really clicks. You know, I've also like heard some people like conspiracy theory kind of thing, like, what if they're not actually benching Poe Belcher, they're just using him for academy to like get in the playoffs there because they think they're screwed in LCS or something. But like, I don't think that really makes sense. Either way, they're not looking great, so we'll see if they can pull off a miracle in week 9. But they are a game up, so probably gonna make playoffs. All right, now time to talk about our Honda MVP. Feels like the discussion is getting a bit spicy. It transitioned from originally being like Cloud9 in all roles to maybe someone else, and now actually don't think Cloud9 is favorite. I don't think anyone in Cloud9 is favorite to win anymore. I still think that there's some discussion around Blaber, because you have to look at the year as a whole. Yes, his recent weeks haven't been as good, but his early weeks were so incredible. So he maybe should still be considered. But for me, I'm feeling like CoreJJ, Jensen, and maybe even like Bjergsen are maybe like all up there. I think CoreJJ is the clear MVP. Like, I'm not even gonna lie. I think it would be hard for me to vote for anyone except him. Unless Bjergsen maybe absolutely like stomps everyone this last weekend and they somehow get like first or something. But like, I just think CoreJJ has been incredible the whole year long, the whole split long, I should say.
Don't disagree, but I do think there's a chance that like they are playing for MVP this weekend. Because even if they don't get first, if TSM beats them, secures the second by beating TL, and then and you know, Bjergsen pops off in that game, I think he's built a pretty strong case at the end.
That's what I was gonna be like, what if Bjergsen goes down to bottom lane and he just kills only CoreJJ?
What if he
like
picks Bard
times?
Mid?
He walks past tactical and he's just like, my MVP, and just kills CoreJJ and then walks away.
I'll consider it.
I'm go ahead.
I mean, that to me is the hot discussion right now for Honda MVP, because I feel pretty similarly. Even if Cloud9 win both their games, their opponents are very weak, so it's hard to get more votes, more fan sentiment by Cloud9 now stomping Dig and then CLG are their last two opponents. It's not like people are gonna be like, oh wow, you know, I'm back on the Blaber train. Even if he has an amazing game, it's kind of hard. Meanwhile, TL are literally playing TSM, and this is the hottest topic. If TSM win both of those games and deliver that loss to Team Liquid, and then like, I feel like there is a lot riding on that, especially with the form that Bjergsen's been in recently. Him and CoreJJ going to,
and we even got a Twitter question specifically about this from It's Not Satirical. He is saying Sunday's matchup of TL versus TSM decides MVP, right? Winner takes all, CoreJJ versus Bjerg. So you know what the real chat move is. Corey JJ just lane swaps mid and he goes against Bjergsen.
They should make a bet pregame. They should tweet at each other. Some of them should be like, all right, handshake. Whoever wins this game, we'll throw our weight behind the other one's MVP.
They start campaigning.
Yeah, they campaign for the other person.
Kind of memeing about, you know, Bjergsen going down to bottom lane, killing Corey JJ. It's way more probable that with a pick, Corey JJ goes mid to gank Bjergsen. I don't think they're going to let him get barred. Bard is not going to go through. The nerfs aren't on until it's a, you know, 10-16 playoff patch. So it's going to be banned. But that type of thing is what would add the extra spice.
I'm actually sad that Bard got nerfed, to be honest. I just think he's so fun to watch.
He's actually busted right now. I know he is.
He has been for a long time, though.
He's too safe, too.
I mean, he's been, like, really high win rate for a long time, even in solo queue. But
everybody feels bad when one of their favorite champions they like to play gets them.
But even just to watch. Like, it's the same reason I like seeing Lee Sin and stuff be good, champions like that. But anyway, yeah, so I mean, the MVP discussion, I think, is really interesting, right? I do think, you know, to your point, as much as it is a full split award, recency bias is always going to play some part in people's minds. It's just a fact of life, right? And we do have to remember, it's like, it's interesting because you're saying, like, you know, Blabber can't, like, reconvince people, because even if he slams some teams, it's like, you know, some noobers at the bottom and then no one cares. But, like, if they go 2-0 this weekend, and, you know, TSM goes 2-0 or whatever, and they finish with the same record and stuff, it's not as though Bjergsen had no bad games this whole split, right? He has really turned it up at the right time, I think, and he's really been dominating down the stretch. But Blabber will have had, you know, equal or more dominant games than I think Bjergsen has. And then it's just a question of, like, okay, well, like, are you more important to your team? Like, you know, were you the reason you were winning more? Like, you know, that then you kind of have to make more judgment calls on all of those types of things.
I think if the only way that Blabber gets it again somehow is, like, TL and TSM really struggle in their last weekend. They smash, some tiebreaker happens, Blabber runs over the tiebreaker and, you know, carries them back into a bye. But even that feels pretty much,
I think,
unlikely.
All Pro is going to be so interesting too. And we'll talk about that more next week, but, like, oh my God, just off, like, it went from, like, everyone Cloud9 and maybe Core JJ to, like, I don't even know.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got FlyQuest members in there. Someday can always make a good case. We got all kinds of stuff, even outside of the top teams. Golden Guardians.
Closer, I think, will probably be in the top three and stuff, right? Like, there's a lot of people who can make an argument to be in there.
And by the way, there is a 93.5% chance that we have at least one tiebreaker. So we're going to have some tiebreaker games at the end of the split here too.
Yeah, I heard there's pretty good chance of like 1, 2, or 3, and then beyond that it drops off a lot. But I
add them all together, having at least one tiebreaker is basically happening.
I always hope when we get tiebreakers it's for, like, the really important ones, like buy or not, into playoffs or not, right? When it's like,
now I want to see the tiebreaker between Immortals and Dig.
The 7th or 8th seed. Yeah, that's the hype one for sure. All right, well, you know, the MVP voting and stuff obviously not going to come out for a while, but after next week we'll start talking, I think, a lot more about All Pro at the end of the split, and be looking towards those end of season awards. We've got some Twitter questions here though from you guys. This one comes from A Klutz. He says, with the recency of Caitlyn getting buffed, we've seen considerably more Jhin pick competitively. Do you guys think this is just coincidental, or do you think that Jhin is the safest pick into Caitlyn due to his decent range?
Well, he has 550 range, so that's pretty average for 80 carries. Is most of them 550? You might be referring to W, because W is the part of the kit that makes Jhin for me. Jhin being a marksman that has a snare is super rare, and I've already been talking to some of the teams about the Jhin picks that have been coming up into Ash and stuff like that, Ash and Caitlyn, and most of them have just been saying, it's player specific of if you have a Jhin player now, you do it. But he's getting buffed on the 10-16 like we talked about. So he's already going to be in a better place for playoffs. So maybe more of them get into the Jhin space. But to me, it's so much around having that utility and being able to get snares for your team. I was listening to the Sneaky co-stream last weekend, and he was just complaining for like 20 minutes about the ineffectiveness of Jhin's ultimate now, of what the state that it has been reduced to. So if you're picking him, yeah, you pick him for the snare.
Yeah. All right, next one here. This one's from David Yoshimoto. He says, did Cloud9 get complacent, and should they regret all those experimental drafts? How much more dominant does TL's four consecutive championships look now? Can we say TL's run was better and more dominant? I think without a question, four straight, you know, I mean, C9 could still win, right? So we have to like leave that door open. But if C9 doesn't win this split, of course, it's not even close. TL had a way better run. That's the most championships anyone's ever won in North America. But you can say that Cloud9, within a window, looked like the most dominant team of North America still.
Yeah,
I don't think they look like that anymore, but you know, things can change.
Right, it's like longevity versus sheer dominance for that, you know, that game and that period of time, like you're saying. Yep. So TL's is more impressive in a longevity standpoint. And should C9 have experimented? You can't say without knowing. Like, they might not have got complacent. They might have been trying to find new picks in the meta that they thought were good. And they talk about having good win rates with the Lux Sona lane. So like, is that even experimenting? People do that kind of stuff.
I mean, it's the highest win rate in solo queue of any bot lane by like a lot, Lux Sona. So like, it's obviously good. And I wouldn't say it's complacent to try out new things. I think maybe you could say they underestimated their opponents more than complacency. Complacency is like doing the same thing and just like resting on your laurels. Trying new stuff isn't being complacent, right? So yeah. I don't see it like that. But it'll be interesting to see if they can bounce back. And I'm sure they'll regret experimenting if they don't get there by. All right, we got some anchor questions now. The first one is coming here from Ryan Hodgson. And he's asking about if practicing under high ping conditions are worth it or not.
I'm a South African playing on the EU West servers on anything from 160 to 240 ping, and have peaked consistently in low gold elo, playing mostly low mechanical junglers and supports since Season 3. My question to you guys is, how much does ping affect your ability to play the game at varying different levels, and could training on high ping ever put you at an advantage? I'm thinking about this in a similar way to how marathon runners often train at high altitude to handicap themselves, and applying that logic to the issue of NA pros playing on 60 ping. Thank you so much for taking the time. I love you guys, and shout out to Honda as well.
Shout out to Honda. I like this guy.
Heck yeah. I really like this question because it's a different take on a similar question where people usually, you know, bring up ping, but I like this angle at it because it just made me start to imagine like you have like some you know training capsule where you're training on low ping and it evolves you to like see into the future or react quicker in some way, or like you're working out your hand muscles or something. First of all, for the first part of the question, you playing on 160 to 240 ping has a super big impact on
especially
on
the, 240
yeah,
is
the
like...
level you can get to. I remember when we were in Berlin at the EU LCS studio playing from there, I had less than 240 playing to North American servers to try and play my Decay game, and it just felt like I was playing in molasses, you know, completely bogged down. I did the same strategy. I only played Udyr, only play, you know, very low mechanic champions. I think it has a really big impact at that level. As far as the possibility of training on higher ping making you better, it's not like training muscles, and you're going to get stronger if you train in higher gravity. It's like training muscles in that you're making your muscle and your twitch reactions become accustomed to this timing difference, and so muscle memory that people talk about, you're actually training it in the wrong area at the wrong timers. So it's not beneficial. It's actually hurts you. And a lot of the pros complain even about switching between, 60 ping and 5 ping or whatever.
It's more akin with running to being like, instead of just like training in high gravity, it's more akin to like you're changing your running form. You know what
you're
I mean?
You're running
in like, you know, like, or you're like you're pulling your knees up super high or whatever. It's like, that's harder, but it's not the same form that you need to be like learning and training. It's different muscle memory.
Final thing I'll say about the high ping getting higher rated. Kwas famously, when he was playing for Venezuela on North American servers, had like 250 ping and was challenger and was dumpstering kids with Swain too, which was like not even a strong champ most people thought in the meta. Yeah. So you know, ping in solo queue, it hurts, it's annoying, you can overcome it.
240 is pretty extreme though. I will say
I mean, I said 300 ish yeah, like yeah. It was nuts.
I'm sure you will be higher rated if you take a vacation and head up to Europe and you get closer to the server. I'm sure you can peak way higher.
It's also like One thing I will say is because I used to play with really bad ping. Like when I played, when I lived in Toronto, I was playing to LA servers, right? Because that was before they moved the league servers. So I played with like 120, 140, and I got to diamond with that. But like, I think there's a huge difference between that and 240. And I would also say once you're used to playing on lower ping, going to higher ping is much harder.
Nightmare.
Like it's way easier to go down than it is to go back up. So like you can get used to something and do okay. Like when I played WoW for my first couple of years in Arena, I played to LA servers and I had dial up internet. So I played with like 250, 300 ping. And then when I first started playing with good ping, it felt like I was playing the game on like easy mode. It's really, really funny, like realizing how much of an advantage it is. Like even in league, the biggest thing I noticed going from even 120, 140 to lower ping was, you know, when someone would use like an ability on you and you react to it, right? Like say Annie flash tippers and I flash, I'm always stunned even if my flash goes off, right? Like on the other side of it, the ability has always hit you. So like anything reactive, I think is incredibly difficult to actually deal with. All right, we got one more question here from David Slavic. This one is about removed items being seen in Champion's Kit, like Volley's LT.
Hey guys, I was thinking about how Volley Bear's new ultimate incorporates the old removed item Ohmwrecker. And I was wondering if you thought any other removed items or possibly current items would be interesting to be involved in a Champion's Kit, kind of how Lilia's passive is very similar to Leandri's.
We don't. So as much as I liked a lot of the removed items, there weren't that many that were as crazy as like Dota items that have these super unique effects. I'm thinking maybe Deathfire Grasp, but even that, it would still be kind of straightforward as like a champion ability.
And that's kind of like Charm, even
like Ahri,
right?
Charm, yeah.
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 I think one that I'd like to see is
Banner of Command as your ultimate.
It was that, but Ziggurat Portal. I'd love to have a little Ziggurat Portal champion who
that's
like
Malzahar's W.
Yeah, but it's just that's an interesting AFK one. And you just like, you know, you drop it in the lane, there's your W and it just poops out little guys, you go running down the lane. And you can use it in team fights, you know, then they start spawning creeps in the way, hitting skill shots and stuff. Like it'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. I would be a big fan of more minion based stuff, but like people hate playing against that kind of stuff. People hated Ziggurat Portal and Banner of Command, and they hate like Necro Books and Dota and things like that. So I don't think we'll see it because it would be so unpopular.
Yeah, a lot of champion abilities already are like items like, oh, what if there's a champion ability like Zhonya's? And it's like, well, that's every person who goes kind of untargetable already, except most of them have mobility tacked onto it too, like Vladpool or Fizzy and whatnot.
I mean, Bard literally has the same animation even. All right, like the same graphic for Zhonya, so that's pretty funny. All right, thank you guys so much for the questions. You can keep sending them to us on anchor.fm. If you search The Dive, you'll find us there. You can also hashtag The Dive LOL. I still get tweets every once in a while asking about how to actually ask us questions. You can tag us or not, doesn't matter. Just use the hashtag The Dive LOL. We can search questions by that and pick them from there. Thank you, everyone, for
it certainly helps
in.
To tag. It does I see help it in my tag. Timeline.
Yeah, so tag us all and hashtag The Dive
Don't
LOL.
Tag me.
There you have it.
Don't, not me.
Don't tag Mark. Get him out of there. Flame him.
Mark doesn't care.
I do. I don't care.
Mark hates the fans. There you go. That'll do
fans
it for this
have
week's
never done
episode.
For me.
That'll do it for this week's episode of The Dive. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks to Honda for making this possible. We'll be back at the same time next week to take a look at playoffs, All Pro, everything coming on up. We'll see you then.